Building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work.
Hello and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. Today's conversation is about what it takes to reinvent yourself, which is no small job. And not just talking about reinventing a business, but reinventing your identity. 15 years ago, my guest today, Dr. Darnielle Jervy Harmon, was bankrupt. And today she's built an 8-figure business and helped her clients generate $500 million in revenue. That is a wild story, and we are going to get into the entire thing. Her story isn't about just rebuilding a business after bankruptcy. It is about what happens inside when everything falls apart and what you have to do to rebuild yourself from a place of purpose and realignment. We talk about everything from the psychology of reinvention, the beliefs that hold people back and keep them broke, why chaos feels safer than calm for so many high achievers, and a lot more. This episode stretches how you think about money, power, and peace. It was definitely the highlight of my day. So here's my conversation with Dr. Darnielle. I hope you enjoy it. Darnielle, thank you so much for joining me today. I am so excited about this conversation. I know we're talking about the psychology of reinventing yourself. You went from bankrupt to 8 figures. That is a wild accomplishment. And a lot of people, I think, are struggling in general and struggling to succeed in business. Growing a business in general is a very hard proposition. Mm-hmm. I want to give people today the tips that they can't just go and find online, the tips in like what it takes mentally, physically, emotionally to make a journey like that and to really reinvent yourself. Are you ready for this?
I am so ready for this. I'm on the edge of my seat. Can't wait.
Yes.
And let me just say this first for the person who hears what you said, right? From bankruptcy to 8 figures. First of all, it didn't happen overnight, right?
Right.
I always say no one goes to bed a blunder and wakes up a wonder. It was indeed a journey. And it happened predominantly because I was willing to yield or to surrender to the part of myself, the version of myself that had become accustomed and comfortable with living in lack, experiencing chaos and dancing in the chaos. Like, I think we talked about this a little bit before you started recording. Invariably, as humans here in the United States, right? I don't know that this is true in other countries, but here in the United States, I can tell you, like, we thrive on there being a lot going on. Women get celebrated when they're great multitaskers. But what we know is that you can't chase 2 rabbits and expect to catch either one. Mm-hmm. But we try, right? Because that's what we're taught. That's what we watched happen. That's what we saw done. And so we think that we can do it too. And so personally, I'm going to give a little bit of backstory to how I even got to bankruptcy. I think it's important to know that.
Yeah.
I was born in a family to drug addicted turned crack addicted parents in the projects of Wilmington, Delaware. My mom even went to jail when I was 8, and I was raised by my father and eventually my stepmother. There was a lot of lack surrounding me. And there was even less financial education. And so I heard things like maybe the same things you heard, right? Money doesn't grow on trees and you got to work hard for money and people with money are evil. All of those lessons were ingrained in my psyche so that by the time I became an adult, which I'm going to start at college, and I was presented with the opportunity to get my first credit card on the yard in exchange for the t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
We all did that, right?
Bad
that
choices.
One credit card turned into 8. And by the time I graduated, I didn't have any student loan debt, but I had more than $40,000 on credit cards. Mm-hmm. And the crazy thing is that I can't tell you that I bought responsible things. I can't tell you that I just took care of my basic needs and necessities. What I can tell you is that I felt like for most of my life, there was never enough. And I was finally put in a position where I could make the minimum payment and I could get access to all these things. One of my friends in college told me that a credit card was layaway you get to take home. I understood layaway. Okay.
No. Yeah. Oh, I remember layaway everywhere. Oh my gosh.
Worst thing you could ever be taught, but that's what I was taught. And I knew that experience, that was my life. And so, you know, by the time I was 30 years old, I had almost $200,000 in credit card debt. It is not my finest moment. It's not something I'm excited about. It is just the truth of the matter. Yeah. And so when I got to the point at 35, when I filed bankruptcy, it was the last resort. There was no more money. I couldn't rob Peter to pay Paul. I held off the creditors for as long as I could. I made the minimum payments for as long as I could. And there was just nothing else that I could do but to yield to the fact that I had made some really poor financial decisions. And I feel like I made them honestly based on what I was taught and what I caught about money, because I wasn't raised in an environment where financial education was available to me. And unfortunately, in most places here in the United States, they're not even teaching kids in school financial literacy.
No.
So I did what was done, right? And it resulted in $250,000 in credit card debt. When I went to bankruptcy court, 35 years old, 2010, the bankruptcy trustee had mercy on me. And he agreed to discharge my $250,000 in credit card debt, but only if I would be willing to take a financial literacy course. Mm. That bankruptcy trustee changed my life. Were it not for the mandate to take a financial literacy course, you would not be looking at a multimillionaire right now. There's no way in the world that would have happened. I'll tell you what would have happened. I would have done the same thing. I would have went and ran up a whole bunch more debt. And in 7 to 10 years, I would have filed bankruptcy again. Because mm-hmm. that is the cycle that you perpetuate when you are uneducated. But he saw something better for me, and I'm so grateful. And so I entered that financial literacy course. I learned the practicality of money. I also learned the neuroscience and the spirituality of money. And what I didn't expect to learn, and this is what I think is going to lead into the rest of the conversation we have today, I learned how to shift my identity in relation to and about money. Now, prior to that, I thought my worth was completely tied to what I earned. And what I learned is that my worth was already established and there wasn't anything I would have to do in order to earn it. That just by being, I am worthy. It took a lot of years and a lot of work, somatic work, of the body work, mindset, neuroscience work, therapy work, in order to shift my identity beyond what I had been taught, right? And what I think a lot of people don't realize is that from birth to the age of 7, who you become as an adult is being formed. Mm-hmm. When we are born, we are only born with a subconscious mind, and our conscious mind is formed based on everything that we take in. And so as we watch our elders and those that are rearing us, caring for us, and spending time with us, as we watch them make decisions, decisions that include fear and lack and scarcity and chaos and overwhelm and anxiety, that becomes a part of who we are and what we most identify with. And our nervous system, which is our central processing unit, our own individual operating system, takes on a new normal, a baseline of chaos, of lack, and of scarcity. So that when we are presented with opportunities to experience abundance or overflow, that is actually perceived as dangerous. And we reject it. Mm-hmm. And we continue to meander in a reality that isn't our reality based on the identity that our parents and our, you know, our elders, I believe they did the best that they could with what they had. So this is not an attack on them.
Yeah.
But their best was not the best. And we didn't know any better. So we took everything they told us as if it were true, and it got indoctrinated into our systems and our psyche and the way that we think, and it became the patterns that we observe consciously and subconsciously for the rest of our lives until we realize that, Houston, there is a problem, and we learn how to disrupt the pattern and shifted into something else.
Yeah. And you realize that there was a, some people never realize that there is a problem or they don't know how to solve it. Right. I was a foster parent for a number of years. And one thing that I learned during that process is that sometimes that stuff can even be passed down via genetics. Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Like for example, I fostered a young girl who was removed from the home as an infant. And as she grew older, she still had the tendency to do things like hoarding food and stuff like that, because her family had gone through generations of homelessness. Yeah. Now, she had never experienced the lack of food, but it was a generational thing that had been, you know, like struggled through with by her family. And so things like that can be, of course, the years 1 through 7 when our brain is being formed, those are really formative years. And it can even be genetic. And
epigenetics is what it's called, right? Like when my husband and I, when we were trying to get pregnant, we ended up going through IVF. And what I didn't know in this whole process, which probably will make me sound really ignorant, but I had no idea. I didn't know that there was only so many days a month you could get pregnant. Like, I literally just thought you had sex and you got pregnant in the end. Right? Like, I just really thought that's the way it worked. But what I realized in going through this whole process is that when we as little girls were in our mother's womb beginning to be developed, all of our eggs were already there. Like they were formed through that process. And what happened with those eggs were based on what happened with our mom, which were based on what happened with her mom, which were based on what happened with her mom, which were based on what happened with her mom. Mm-hmm. Like epigenetics is like most of the things that we do and observe, they are passed down genetically. Mm-hmm. And we don't, to your point a few minutes ago, we don't even know and realize, and we're trying to figure out. So one of the stories I tell when I'm speaking often on stage is I will tell the story of the little girl who is watching her mother make a ham. So mom opens the ham, washes the ham, cuts the butt off the ham, puts the ham in the pan, and puts the ham in the oven. Little girl says, "Hey mom, I might want to make a ham for my family one day. Will you tell me why you just cut the butt off the ham?" Mom says, "You know, I actually don't know why I cut the butt off the ham. Call your grandma because that's the way she did it." Little girl calls grandma. "Hey, grandma, I'm here with mom. Mom's making a ham. She just washed the ham, cut the butt off the ham, put the ham in the pan, put the ham in the oven. Why'd she cut off the butt?" Grandma says, "Well, I don't know why your mom did it. But back in the day, I did it because my pan wasn't big enough to hold the whole ham." So many times we are doing what we saw done without ever asking why.
Yep.
And that is who we become. And entrepreneurs who don't know and understand about money, about worthiness, who only understand scarcity and lack, are entrepreneurs who underprice and overdeliver.
Yep.
Because they think their worthiness is in the more that they give, even though they make pennies on the dollar for it, because that's what they watched happen. Mm. It's a vicious cycle.
That is such a good story. I have never heard that before. So talk to me a little bit about this shift. It sounds like, I mean, there was a lot of change to be made. And I think we all go through this process as entrepreneurs. And right, when we have those like those preconceived notions, those like, you know, things passed down through our genetics, it can be very, very challenging to overcome. Yeah. It becomes part of your identity.
It does.
When you were working through bankruptcy and starting a business and all of that good stuff, talk to me about the identity that you had to change and what part of your identity was the hardest to let go of during that time?
Oh, that is such a great question. When I started the business, I started the business with something to prove, to prove to myself and to prove to others that I was worthy and I was deserving, because the source of my worthiness had been in question for a very long time. And I mean, let me just tell you, that's the worst impetus ever to start a business. And anybody who started a business for that reason in this current market are probably kicking themselves, right? And so my identity was completely tied to what I had, what I earned, what I wore, and how other people perceived me. It was all externally facing. And while there's not anything inherently wrong with that, the problem is when your identity is external, It's not rooted in anything. Mm-hmm. It's going to wither and fade away and flip and flop with the wind, which means that you're going to spend most of your time chasing your tail and very little of your time grounded in purpose and actually creating the impact that you desire when you start a business.
Yeah.
Right? So the very first thing that I had to learn is that my identity was not in any way tied to my worth or my worthiness or how much money I had. That was a tough pill to swallow because for so many years, who I was directly correlated to what I had, right? I think about the model of abundance, which is who must I be in order to do what I desire to do so that I can have what I desire to have.
Be, do, have. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Now we've all heard that, but most people live the opposite. They live the model of scarcity, which is what must I have in order to do what I desire to do so that I can be who I desire to be. They think that the possessions that they hold determine who they are, but it's actually the opposite. Who you are determines what you have, but that's not what we're taught. And so it's very hard to learn the lesson. And so for me, recognizing how to separate the two, how to create a line down the middle, right? A drawing a line in the sand and literally going through a series of exercises, some of them prescribed by my therapist, some of them through some of the books that I read in that particular season of my life, and just getting to the point where I realized that who I am, who I be, was established before I became an entrepreneur. And because it was already established, I heard this quote once. I was watching a movie, and at the end of the movie, one of the actors said, if you want to know the purpose of a thing, consult the creator of that thing. I'm a God girl. I am very much in tune with my spirituality. I'm not religious. But I'm very much in tune with having a personal relationship with God, the creator of the abundant universe that we get to live in every single day. And so as I begin this probative journey to figure out who is Darnielle Antoinette. Now, I learned in the sixth grade that my name means the secret place where dreamers go to dream. That's a powerful name meaning, right? Speaking prophecy of what I might do in the world one day when I walked into my identity and anchored into it and grounded into it fully. Before that, I was flippant. I didn't really know who I was. I was trying to figure it out and I was allowing other people to define who I might be. But as a result of this process and hitting the proverbial rock bottom of bankruptcy and having no money, you have to rebuild yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have any money and you are still amongst the living, it is a very clear indication that your identity could have never been tied to that in the first place.
Yeah.
Because how could you still be here if you have no more, right? And so that was the beginning of the Phoenix rising, so to speak, right? Coming up from out of the ashes. And then from there, I just started to ask the questions, who am I? And to find many of those answers, I went to various spiritual texts. Some of it was the Bible. Some of it was the Kabbalah study, like studying Kabbalah. And I began to just seek, what were the character traits that I should personify in order to step into the identity that is equivalent to my abundant birthright? And I started to fake it until I made it, like started to act as if, started to be it in order to become it, slowly but surely, steady, every single day, making conscious, intentional decisions to be the version of myself that called in the level of abundance that I was beginning to believe was my birthright and that I was fully deserving of and had the capacity to receive because of who created me to spend time on this earth.
All right, y'all, it's shameless plug time. I want to take a quick break to chat with you about Excelity, my full service marketing agency. For the last 12 years, we've been working closely with B2B software and service companies. Now we are expanding and looking for growth stage companies with a bold vision, but maybe lacking the marketing strategy or resources to get there. Or hey, you might have resources that just aren't working out. We definitely see that all the time. At Excelity, our team gets results and we have a ton of fun doing it. I'm sure you can tell that from listening to this podcast. So if you or someone you know is a fit, check us out at excelitymarketing.com or reach out to me directly on LinkedIn.
I have heard some people say that they think fake it till you make it is nonsense. I believe the opposite. I think you have to step into who you are, who you want to be. It's like, what do they say about like dressing for, you know, like
the job you want.
The job you want. You know, it's kind of like that, right?
It's like, it's be it to become it. Like, and I get the fake it till you make it. Like, fake is pretentious. It's not real.
Yeah.
You know, the Bible says is that this way. It says, speak those things that be not as though they were. So just give life to it, right? Speak it as if it's already. Dr. Martin Luther King, the quote that I love so much is, faith is taking the first step without seeing the whole staircase. Mm-hmm. Right? It's about refusing to allow what you see to hinder what you know to be true on the inside of you. And there is a portion of time before the manifestation where you are speculating on what's possible. But it is the insistent and consistent practice and speaking of it as if it is going to arrive that actually wills it to arrive.
Yeah.
It's the darndest thing, right? Like, it's the darndest thing. It's like the law of polarity, which says that whatever you are desiring, the opposite is also true, right? So if you are desiring wealth and abundance, then there's also lack and scarcity, right? If they both have to be true at the same time.
Yeah.
And so for the person who's lived their whole life in lack and scarcity, they have to know and understand that there is also abundance and overflow available. Mm-hmm. Now, most people don't ever look up high enough, change their viewpoint, right? We spend all of our time at our vantage point instead of looking up at our vision point. Most people don't ever realize that there is another reality. But the beautiful thing about hitting rock bottom is that anything is a possibility.
There's nowhere else to go. You are willing to
consider anything as truth, because what you've already believed to be true hasn't served you in a way that honors your existence. And so it was literally the curiosity, the questioning, the possibility that, the audacity to hope that began to change how I saw everything, including myself.
Yeah.
And once I realized that my worth is not tied to what I have, and that my worth was established before I was formed in my mother's womb, it changed my countenance. And I started to act as if I did have a birthright. I started to make decisions from a place of abundance instead of always assuming that the other shoe was going to drop in lack or scarcity. And those small, subtle tweaks began to add up to the unassailable difference. First, 1 million, right? So within a year of filing bankruptcy, I was a net worth millionaire. Now, I was able to keep my home. The edict from the bankruptcy trustee was, as long as I continued to make my mortgage payment, I could continue to have the house. Well, when I bought the house, for $320,000. By the time a year later, the market had changed massively, my house was worth $465,000. So nearly $500,000 for my house. I had a 401k that I never touched, even when I left corporate America, that in the very early years, I had bought some Microsoft stock and I never touched it. And over time, my Microsoft stock, that portion of my portfolio went up over $300,000. So now we're sitting at $765,000 with just those two things. Well, then a few other distinct things began to happen. Another property that I owned, because I was a landlord, had its value increased to over $200,000. And before I know it, I had assets that were worth $1 million. Now, I didn't have $1 million in my bank account.
Yeah.
I couldn't go out and make it rain anywhere, but I had the net worth of $1 million. And that being able to tell myself that I was a millionaire was all the ammunition I needed between that and the financial literacy course to learn about money, to learn how wealthy people act and respond in relation to money, and to learn how to use my money to create more money for me.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, within 10 years, that 1 million was 12 million. And so the story goes. And that was net worth. That wasn't even what we were doing inside of my business. I was a millionaire without my business. And then once my business started to generate seven and multiple seven figures a year, that began to expand the footprint of my net worth.
I think there are multiple misconceptions that people have about wealth. One is that to be a millionaire, they think you're sitting on $1 million in cash, which is not true, right? And then another part of it is that when you begin to accumulate wealth, you have to start making your money work for you, right? And you just touched on that a little bit. I think that people think that the process of getting to $1 million or accumulating any kind of wealth has to be hard. And we touched on this a little bit when we were talking before, before we started recording. It has to be a struggle. I used to think that too, right? Like I always used to think that it had to be the hard way, or like I had to suffer in order to be successful, and I had to give up something, right? Whether it was like sleep or self-care. I think all the time about, there's like that image that circulates online that's like social life, business success, happy relationship or happy family. And it's like a triangle, and it's like pick two. You can only have two. You can't have all of it.
Yeah.
And that's so untrue.
It is very untrue.
And I think that people think if you are to have all of that, then you are going to be totally run down and suffering and whatnot. What do you think of this idea that you have to suffer to be successful?
Yeah, I believe that it is a lie from the pit of hell is what I believe. and trust me, I used to believe it too. Right. But just like I used to believe in Santa Claus and I don't anymore, I can also change that belief. Beliefs are meant to be reconstructed. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that we get it honestly because that's what we are taught. That is what is inbred in us, that you have to work hard. I mean, think about it this way and think about the times when you've been celebrated for something you've done. The people who celebrate you, invariably, they say something like, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you. You worked so hard for this. So they're basically reinforcing the narrative that the only way you can have success is if you work hard. But what I know is that, especially when it comes to money, you know, financial success doesn't come through hard work. It actually comes through alignment. All success comes through alignment. And I'm not trying to oversimplify it and say that there is not work that has to be done.
Of course.
But there is nothing anywhere that says that you have to hustle and grind yourself into exhaustion and white knuckle to the bone in order to experience success. Yeah. There is effort that must be expended, but no one said that you have to sacrifice. That is the story that we are constantly fed. I mean, I watch Shark Tank. I love Shark Tank. And I promise you, almost every episode, Mark Cuban would say something like, yeah, you worked really hard for this. That's his story. That's his reality. And that's what he's translating into other people. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there is another way. Through doing the inner work, I believe 95% of all success is internal and only 5% is external. Mm-hmm. If you do the work in your body to regulate your nervous system, to create a new normal of what abundance and overflow looks like and to make it feel safe to yourself, then universally, this is universal law. You will be presented with opportunities to validate the abundance that is happening on the inside of you externally because of the law of polarity. It can't be happening over there if it's not also happening over there. It can't be happening in here if it's not able to happen out there. And so we really can create an environment through the appropriate effort and taking the right actions along with lots of inner work to produce the result that we want. I wrote the book on it. My book, it's behind me, Move to Millions, the proven framework to become a million-dollar CEO with grace and ease instead of hustle and grind. And since 2021, 82 entrepreneurs and small business owners have experienced their first or next seven figures through my Move to Millions method. And sure, again, there is work that has to be done, but it's not grueling 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to the sacrifice of your family, your livelihood, and your health and wellness.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way, but it will be that way if that's the story you're telling yourself, because that's the thing that holds us back, whatever story we're telling ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's about setting boundaries for yourself too, right? Because if your boundaries say, well, I'm going to work at any old time and I'll take calls and I will miss my kids' events or I will do whatever, you can find something to fill any space that it will allow, right?
100%.
And people expect from you what you give them, right? If you are responding to everyone immediately, if you are like not setting those boundaries with people, then they are going to expect that of you because that is what you have taught them to expect of you. So yes, I think we are in total alignment there for sure. Talk to me about, well, one, I know we are running out of time and I have so many more questions that I want to ask, but let me pick through a few of them. What would you say is one thing that you hope the next generation of women entrepreneurs doesn't have to unlearn? Like, what would you just, if you could impart wisdom in them that they would just come in knowing, what would it be?
That they are worthy. They do deserve it. That would probably be the biggest thing.
Yeah.
You do deserve it. They will pay it. And it's because as little girls, most of us were taught that we should be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, and let's just look at the, I was born in 1975. Guess what you couldn't do as a woman in 1975? You couldn't get your own loan. Like you needed a man and 50 years ago. So it's not like we just stumbled upon this. This was the reality, but that day is not today. And we are worthy. I believe that if you are here, it's because there's purpose for your life. And if we could just be confident enough, despite all of the murmurings that we may have heard from those who were raising us, again, they did the best that they could with what they had. Their best was not the best. If we could just, in spite of that, believe that we are worthy and we do deserve it, our countenance would change. We'd, you know, sit a little bit taller. We'd articulate a little bit stronger. And we would allow it to be known that we are a force to be reckoned with, that we are worthy. We do deserve it. We've done our due diligence and we are brilliant at it. Our greatness is fully on display and we will not back down or apologize because of it. That's what I wish we didn't have to learn, that we came into the land of business ownership fully aware so that we could say it with our chest and we could hold our head back and we can hold our head up. And we can articulate it without apology, without pause, and without feeling the need to justify or explain. That is what I desire. And that is what I wish.
Wow. That is a perfect place to end this episode. It is like you just tied a bow on everything. I so appreciate your time and having this conversation with me. It is definitely the high point of my day. And
thank you so much.
For everyone that's listening, please share this with one person that needs to hear this message. I know that you have someone in your life that is operating from a place of lack or that needs to be picked up somewhere along their journey and can learn from the lessons that we discussed today. So be sure to share this episode with that one person and or tag me on social and share it there. Thank you so much. And I will talk to you next time.